Amen. Thank you, Noel, for that special. Go with me to Colossians in chapter number 1. I do need to correct one thing from the video announcements, and it was my fault. I don't know what date it is, apparently. And so our business meeting, it's not tonight. You'll notice in the bulletin, it's next Sunday night. And so don't come tonight and stick around after the evening service in the auditorium waiting for the business meeting. It won't be here. Now, still come tonight, but come next week as well for the business meeting, and that'll take place then, not this evening. And also, it didn't make it into the bulletin this week, but we have our teen activity coming up this Friday. And so I'd like to invite all of our teenagers from 7th grade all the way through 12th grade to be here at the church at 5 o'clock this upcoming Friday for our Real Life Clue Night. We're very excited for it. We put in a lot of effort into planning it, and I know that you'll have a great time as we come and enjoy that activity together. And that, again, is this Friday. If you have any questions about that, you can come and see me after the service. And Colossians in chapter number 1 is where we're primarily going to be this morning. And I honestly have some good news for you. We're really not going to be long this morning at all. I really have one thing that I want to communicate this morning, one simple thing. And it took me a really long time to get it, though. The pastor told me a few weeks ago I'd be preaching this morning, and I started praying about what the Lord would lead me to. And I normally pray that he'd lead me to a passage first. And I just started thinking about the book of Colossians, and I started reading Colossians and studying it. And of course, as is normal with me, it became my favorite book of the Bible all of a sudden. You know, I just started finding things all over the place, and I started getting excited, and, oh, this is great. And then I get to the next chapter, and I'm like, oh, no, this is what I want to teach, and so many things. And I had to whittle it all down, and I want to really this morning just communicate one simple thing that I think the whole book of Colossians is pointing back to. And I think it'll be a blessing to you this morning. It certainly was to me. And would you look down with me in Colossians chapter number 1, and look in verse number 9. This is Paul as he begins to express what his prayer is for the church. He hears that they've accepted the gospel and they began bearing fruit. And in verse number 9, he says, "For this cause also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you." And listen to what his prayer is for them. After they've already been saved, this is what he desires. "And to desire that ye might be filled with the knowledge of his will, in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that ye might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God." You notice what he said there? I want you to walk in a way that's pleasing to the Lord. Don't you want to please God? I want God to be able to look at my life and say, you know what, Hunter, I'm pleased with the way that you've lived your life. I'm pleased with the way that you've stewarded the life that I have given you. I want that to be said of me. I would assume that would be the same with pretty much everyone here. If you're in church this morning, I would assume that your desire would be to please the Lord. And Paul is going to, towards the end of the book, he's going to kind of show us what a life looks like that's lived worthily, that's lived in a manner that God can say, I'm pleased with this life. And I say, okay, if I want to please the Lord, then yeah, I want to do that. Go with me to chapter number 3. And Paul's going to explain some of the things that life is going to look like. And he starts with some lists about these are the things you're not going to do. And he said, these are the things you are going to do. And he said, okay, well, I want to please God. Chapter 3, verse number 5, what do I got to do? "Mortify, therefore, your members which are upon the earth." Okay, put them to death. Okay. "Fornication." Okay, we're good. "Uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence." Well, okay, and you're reading this, it's like, okay, well, whatever that is, and inordinate affection and concupiscence and covetousness, and which is idolatry, "for which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience, in the which ye also walked some time when ye lived in them. And now ye also put off all of these." So, okay, another list. Okay, I can do this. Anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication, out of your mouth. "Lie not to one another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds." Like, okay, well, you read that. It's like, okay, well, there's a handful of things. I can try to do that, okay? And well, I'll try to put those things together, and maybe I can live in a way that's worthy to God. That's a good thing. And then you keep reading. It's like, that's not it. There's things I have to do. Okay, I can't just avoid these things. I have to do certain things as well. And you keep reading. And in verse number 12, he says, "Put on, therefore, as the elect of God." And if you want to switch me over to this mic, that's totally fine. I'll just stay here. He says, "Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, Bowels of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearance of one another, and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful. And it's like these lists go on and on and on. And to be honest, you kind of might read one of these lists of all these things. Like, you want to live pleasing to God, and then you see what that life looks like, and you kind of like take a breath. It's like, well, I mean, I want to live pleasing to God, but that sounds really difficult. I mean, not that I don't want to please God, I do. But part of me almost wonders, like, can I do that? Can I put off all of those things? I want to. The desire is certainly there. But the more that list goes on and on and on, the harder it kind of gets. And it can kind of just be a little overwhelming. How do I do that? Is God giving me some sort of a task is he basically saying he's never going to be pleased with me? Knowing that I'd never be able to do all of these things? Or am I supposed to somehow reach this, like, perfection? And what am I supposed to do? And we got to be careful. Because often what we're tempted to do as we read the Bible, at least which is the case with me, and I would assume might be the case with you, is I look for those parts that I think could apply to me. That's a good thing to do. Would you ever notice that some parts of the Bible are easier to apply to your life than other parts? Right? And sometimes, if we're not careful, what we might do is you kind of skip over some parts to get to the parts that seem really clear, that are telling us what to do. We tend to like the do's and the don'ts. And so, and we come across a book like Colossians, and we start to read it, and we kind of just skim over some of the other parts, you know? And it's like, okay, Jesus is the image of the invisible God, yeah, okay, and all things were created by him, and created for him, and for, okay, yeah, I got that. And be humble, and forget, that's what I need to do. And we kind of skip over a lot of things, and we get right to the do's and the don'ts, and the things that seem really easy to apply to us. But I'd like to just encourage you, hey, whoever you're listening to, he sounds really good, okay? And I'm just giving you a hard time. But if we're not careful, what we're almost tempted to do is almost treat some parts of the Bible as more important than other parts. And yet, if you'll notice, when we do that, we normally have to get to the end of a book before we start getting to all these do's and the don'ts. I mean, we have to skip chapters 1 and 2 before we get to the do's and the don'ts in the book of Colossians. Chapter 3 and 4 are all about these things that you ought to live your life this way and avoid doing things this way. But what did the whole first half of the book say? And it's not just Colossians. You'll notice as you read the Bible, this kind of tends to happen a lot. Like, you read Ephesians, there's 6 chapters. The first 3 chapters don't tell you to do anything. The last 3 chapters are just do's and don'ts. But I'd like to challenge us this morning that maybe, just maybe, God put some of that stuff at the beginning on purpose. He might have put some of those things there because he knew that they were going to be able to help us, and he knew that they were going to be something very important. And a lot of times, what I notice is as we seek to live our lives pleasing to God, and we seek to do that by living in a manner that's worthy of the person that he's called us to be, we skip a step. We skip a step in the process. We jump over step number 1, and we get right to step number 2, which is do and don't. And then we almost get surprised when we can't. We almost get surprised when we're overwhelmed and it feels like it's an impossible task and we don't know how to do it and we don't know that we'll be able to make it through. You know, I remember when I was going into high school, my mom signed me up for an honors class, honors English. And I was never even good at English, but she signed me up for it anyways because it was supposed to be something that was going to be really good for those who took it. You know, it was going to help kind of give you a head start and something that was going to kind of put you ahead of the curve, if you were. And, you know, like, it would get you ready for the AP classes and get these early college credits. And so I was like, hey, you want to take this class? And so I remember I showed up first day of school. And the teacher is a real happy guy. He just started naming all for the whole class period all these assignments and requirements that we were going to have to do for the class. And he says, you know, like, you're going to have to read this book, so I'm going to need you to purchase it. And you think, okay, well, I can read a book in a year. That's okay. He says, and then I need you to read this book, and this book, and this book, and this book. And you're like, oh, goodness. That's a little more than I thought, and that might be a little more difficult, but maybe we can get that done. And he says, okay, and now let's get to the project. And you're like, whoa, there's more than that. And he started naming more and more and more things, and it was kind of overwhelming. And the very end of the class, he just looked at us and he said, listen, I'll be honest with you guys. I'm telling you everything up front, because if you don't think you can handle it, I just want you to stand up and just leave the class right now. And there were like four people that stood up right there in the class and just walked out. Why? Because it seemed like overwhelming. And we got to be careful that sometimes as Christian, sometimes it can almost seem overwhelming. Like, does God expect us to be this person that sometimes you might feel like, I could never be that person. I might want to be, but I've tried, and yet I still fail. And I give it my all, and I put in all my effort, and I find myself coming up short. And my simple message for us this morning is, let's back up a little bit, and let's look at step number one of what God commands us to do for all of his people. And it's found in what Paul prays at the very beginning of the chapter. Would you look back with me at what we read already, Colossians 1, and look in verse number 9. Look at what he says very carefully. For this cause, we also, since the day we heard of it, do not cease to pray for you and to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of his will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding. What's the first thing he prays for? He prays for them to be filled with the knowledge of what God's will for them is, and to be able to understand it with spiritual wisdom. And then he says in verse number 10, that you might be able to walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God. So if we look at the end, our goal, where we want to be, I know I told you I'd stay behind here, and I already failed, right? Our goal at the end, we want to be pleasing to God. And we know that if we want to be pleasing to God, then one of the things God is looking at is he's looking at the life that we're living. Moses says that we ought to walk in a certain manner. So, okay, I want to please God. And in order to do that, I've got to walk in a certain manner. But what is the step that comes before then? And Paul prays that they would be filled with the knowledge of God's will. That seems a little interesting to me. It seems like that might be something I don't normally spend a whole lot of time thinking of, but this is the step that Paul gives. And if we think about it, this is kind of how like Christianity works, right? I mean, think about this. How did we first come into a relationship with God? Did we start by working? No, that's the opposite, right? We couldn't come to Jesus by working. What was the first thing we had to do? We had to learn something. We had to learn about what God's love for us was that made him be compelled to come down to earth and take on the consequence of our sins and die for us. It's the message of the gospel. Back up just a couple verses and look at what Paul says here. Same chapter, but verse number 4. He says, since we have heard of your faith in Christ Jesus and love which ye have for all the saints, for the hope which is laid up for you in heaven. He says, listen, we have heard. Now you got to remember, Paul had never even been to Colossae. One of his fellow workers, Epaphras, had been to Colossae, and he had led these people to the Lord. And when he comes back, he starts telling Paul about, hey, these people have faith in God. These people have love one for another. And why? Because there's a hope that's laid up for them in heaven, which ye have heard before in the word of the truth of the gospel. Where did this hope come from? It came from the message of the gospel. And verse number 6 is really important. He says, which is come unto you as it is in all the world, and bringing forth fruit, as it doth also in you, since the day that ye heard of it and knew the grace of God in truth. How did we come to know God? How did we come to be adopted into his family? How did we come to have our sins forgiven? How did we come to be God's children? Well, it started off by us having to learn something. It started off by us having to obtain some sort of a knowledge about the grace that God had on us, the message of the gospel, and accepting that message. And what does he say here? When they accepted that message, in verse number 6, from that day, it began to bear fruit. You see, when they had got this knowledge of what God had done for them, they responded in a certain way. And their response was found in that first verse, in verse number 4. Their response was faith and obedience. You see what happens when we are filled with the knowledge of God and God's will? We respond in a certain way. We respond by bearing fruit, and often that fruit comes in the form of obedience and faith towards God. And so Paul looks at the church in Colossae, and Paul is seeing that when these people got the knowledge of who God is and what God had done for them and it caused them to bear fruit, he's encouraging them and says, I don't want you to stop there. I want you to continue. This is why he prays this. I want you to continue learning more about him and continue learning more about his will for you, because the more that you learn about his will for you and what he has done for you and what he's like and who he is, the more that the fruit will bear in your life. More and more and more and more. And this is like the simple process that Paul is giving us here. He says, if you want to be pleasing to God, you want to live the way that God has called you to live, we have to start by learning who God is. We have to start by learning what God's like. And we understand this when it comes to relationships, right? And this is not like a new concept. For instance, Paul tells husbands that they have to dwell with their wives in understanding. Well, what does that mean? It means a husband, if he's going to love his wife, he has to know her. He has to understand her. He has to know what her needs are and what are her interests and the things she likes and doesn't like and the things that really make her feel loved and the things that really don't make her feel loved. And right, he has to know those things. And as he learns her and as he understands her and he begins to see more and understand more about her, it causes him to do two things. One, it causes him to love her more. At least it should. It causes him to love her more. And as he loves her more and understands her more, his actions begin to change to reflect that. And the more he knows her, the more that he can love her the right way. The more that he can show her love, not just in a way that maybe anybody would feel loved, but very unique. Something specific for her. Because he's got to dwell with her in understanding. Because in relationships, this is the way they work. If you want to be pleasing to them, if you want to live in a way that they love, then we have to first know who they are and what they desire for us. You notice how Paul ties these two concepts together. In verse number 9, he prays that they would grow in the knowledge of his will. But in verse number 10, when he explains it a little more, he says, not just that you would grow in the knowledge of his will, but grow in the knowledge of God. Why? Because the more that we come to know who God is, and the more we come to know what God is like, the more we begin to understand what he wants. The more we begin to understand what his purpose for us is and his plan for us might be. And he understands that this is a process for us. Now, I'm stressing this because one thing, it gives us a lot of hope. It gives us hope to understand that if you're one of the people like me, who you get to the list in chapter number 3, and you're like, man, I'm kind of working on that one, but okay, I'm struggling here, and okay, I really struggle there, and I struggle there, and oh, okay, well, I'm working here, and oh, I struggle there, and we find ourselves keep coming short and coming short and coming short. Well, sometimes the problem isn't that you're not trying hard enough. Sometimes the problem isn't that you're not putting in enough effort, that you're not giving it your all, that you're not putting in enough time and dedication. Sometimes the problem might be we skip the first step. And we skip a step, we often fail the next one. We often fail. I remember I was, this is not a testament to my parents or anything, but when I was growing up, I was homeschooled for a while. And my mom homeschooled us. Well, she ended up getting cancer, and she wasn't able to monitor us the way that she previously was. And for years, you know, I know you might be surprised, but Brother Hunter wasn't exactly the most honest little kid. And my mom would give us all these assignments, and you know, she'd go through the book basically and say, "Yeah, I want you to read this and do these assignments." And she'd come to us at the end of the day and say, "Okay, did you do it?" And I found out very quickly, she wasn't checking if I actually did it or not. And so I would get the assignments and I would, you know, go to my room and watch some TV and play some video games and do all these things. And then I'd come to mom at the end of the day. She said, "Did you do your work?" I said, "Yeah." And I wasn't doing it. And for years, I did that. Probably about 3 years, I did that. All the way through like upper elementary school and middle school, I never did it. So for years, like I didn't do math. I didn't do science. I didn't do any of those things. Well,
when I went to high school, I wasn't homeschooled anymore. And I remember I went to this high school and had to take some placement tests because I was homeschooled, so they had to figure out where I was. And I went and I took the math placement test. And on my transcripts, it was like 100%, 100%, you know, like I'm nailing it. But in reality, I knew I hadn't done it in years. You know what? I skipped a lot of steps. And I took the placement test, and I placed as like what a fourth or third grader would place as. Like I was so far behind. Why? Because I skipped a bunch of steps, and I jumped ahead. And you know what happened? I failed. And sometimes with us, we skip ahead, and we get to all these expectations that God does desire for us, and they are part of God's will. But when we skip some steps, sometimes it becomes impossible for us to do those things. And in the first couple of chapters, Paul is explaining to them, and if you read, I'd encourage you to go through and read it. I really debated as I was studying this. I was thinking, I ought to just read the whole book for them, the whole book of Colossians. I said, the word of God is more powerful than anything I have to say. And I really thought about doing that because if you read the first couple of chapters, all you're going to see is Paul pointing them constantly. This is who Jesus is. This is how powerful he is. This is the miraculous love that our God has. And he is the image of the invisible God. And all things were created by him and through him. And all things were created for his, all of these things. And he is pointing them back to how much better he is and compares it to everything else in the world and lifts them up and lifts them up and lifts them up. And it's only after he teaches them about who Jesus is that then expectations follow. Then expectations begin to follow. But I also want you to notice that even here, it's a process. It's a process. You see in verse number 6 where he says, which is coming to you as it is in all the world and bringeth forth fruit as it doth also in you since the day that you heard of it. So the day they got saved, the day they came into the knowledge of the gospel and accepted that, fruit began to be brought out of their life. But fruit continued to be brought out of their life. But it didn't stop, it increased. Until all the world the Bible talks about. And Paul is now encouraging them, let it continue increasing. You're bearing fruit, but he wants them in verse number 10, he wants them to get to the place where they can eventually come into the knowledge of God so that they can be fruitful unto all good works. Unto every good work. But the prerequisite was that they may be full of the knowledge of God and his will. And the more we learn, then comes the expectation of a response. And so as we're a Christian, as we approach the Bible, we can't skip these opening chapters. They're important. And what happens is as we begin to read these, and God reveals a little bit of his character. He reveals a little bit about who he is, what his personality is like, what he loves, what he hates, what pleases him, what's dishonorable to him. As we learn those things, then the expectation comes along. And it's progressive. So what am I saying? God doesn't expect us all to be these perfect Christians. What he expects is to progress. He expects us to spend time learning more about who he is. So why is the Bible so important? Why is it that when you come to church, you're always hearing two things, read the Bible and pray? Why? Why does that appear to be so important? Well, really, it's simply because how do we know who God is? If in order to be pleasing to God, I've got to live a certain way. And in order to live a certain way, I've got to know who God is. Well, how on earth do I do this then? Well, the answer is really simple. God revealed himself plainly in his word right here. And so what God is expecting us to do is he's expecting us to come to his word and ask the question, Lord, show me who you are. Lord, show me what your will is and show me what your expectations are and show me what's pleasing to you so that I can then live accordingly. God is expecting us to progress as we learn. But a lot of times we skip that step. And as we look at the Bible, we see examples of this all the time. It reminds me of the passage pastor preached not too long ago with Mary and Martha. And what happens? We've got one of the sisters, Mary, she comes and she sits at the feet of Jesus, and the other sister, she starts skipping a step and doing all these things. And she starts tidying up the house, and she starts getting the meal ready, and she starts cleaning things. And what is she doing? She skips the step of trying to know him. And she gets right to trying to do things for him. Now, that step is an important step. But Mary realizes there's a more important step. A step that must come first. A step that if we skip, we'll find ourselves like Martha being exhausted. We find ourselves living in a way in which we're trying and we're failing. And we want to and we can't. And we're exhausted and we can put on the smile and we make people think that everything's okay. And yet inside, we're struggling with things. And my simple thought for us this morning is, how well do we know God? Like he's a real person that we could know. He's got a personality and character, all of these things. But how well do we know him? Because the more that we know him, the more that we're then qualified to take the next step. But we can't skip it. And what's beautiful is in God's plan for us, is he allows it to be that when we take the steps in order and we come to God first and say, listen, I have flaws and I have mistakes, but show me who you are, that he then gives us the ability that we didn't have before. Look at it if you keep reading. We saw 9, he encourages them to know God's will. Verse 10, he encourages them to walk worthy of the Lord, pleasing unto all pleasing. That life is being fruitful in every good work. That knowledge is, or that life is one that increases in the knowledge of God. But then you get to verse number 11, and he says that they're strengthened with all might, according to his glorious power, unto all patience and longsuffering with joyfulness. You know what happens when we take the steps that God has given us in the order, and we take the time to understand who God is, and we take the time to learn him and know him in a personal way? What am I talking about? I'm talking about developing a relationship with the Father. He gives us the strength to do the things that we were never able to do before. Because when we walk in our life and try to do the things that God expects to us, or expects for us, and yet we try to do them without him, we find ourselves utterly helpless. We find ourselves incapable. We find ourselves unable to do those things which he has expected us. But when we walk with him, when we learn about him and his relationship that he offers to us, what happens? He allows us to be filled with his might so that then we can endure. And so that then we can have patience and all the way have joyfulness. And when we skip this, it's almost like a guy who goes to Home Depot and buys this really expensive power tool. You know, and he brings it home, he spends all this money on it, and his wife goes, wow, you know, it's got a great paint job on it, like it's big, you know, like it's got like a, is that a saw part or something like that? That's big. She asks, what does it do? He goes, I got no clue. For instance, the other day, Pastor asked me if I'd mow the field out here. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. You know, and I'm thinking, well, the church has this ride-on mower. You know, one of the big ones you can sit on, because it's too big to push with one of the hand mowers. And so I'm thinking, yeah, I'll just get on the big mower, because that's the job. That's the tool for the job. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. I've never done it before, but I go out to the shed on my off day, and I open up the shed, I get on the mower, and I'm kind of trying to figure it out, and I turn it on, and I'm able to get it out, and I back it all the way out. I get out to the field, and I start going over the grass, and look behind me, and none of it's getting cut. None of it's just exactly the same. And I'm so confused, and I start pressing every button on the mower. I'm pressing everything, and nothing's changed. Brother Reese is laughing at me. And I'm pushing everything. I got no clue what's going on. And I'm like, this thing must be broke, because it ain't me. I know that for sure. And so I called Brother Reese. He didn't answer the phone. And I called Brother Reese. He didn't answer. And so I remember I had no clue what to do. And I looked down, and at your feet, it's got some, like, instructions. You know, step one, how to turn it on and everything. And I read it, and it shows you how to turn it on. Okay, well, I did that. And then after that, it just says this. Before using, read the instruction manual. I'm like, well, that's not going to do me a lot of good. You know what had happened, though? I had all this power. I had the right tool for the job. Like, I had everything I needed, but when I skipped the step of knowing how to use it, it didn't do me any good. It did me absolutely no good. And what I'm saying is, when we come to living the life that's pleasing to God, we have at our disposal all the power that we need. Jesus is the one who's willingly ready to supply all those things, but we can't skip the step and not learn about it. We have to learn how that those things are offered to us and how it is that we can use them and how it is that those things apply to us. And that's why it's so important that each one of us, we can't skip the step of knowing who God is. What does that mean? It means you can't expect to come to church and learn the do's and the don'ts and go home and expect to live a Christian life that's pleasing to God. It means that every day we have to spend the time to stop and slow down and know him. Not just the commands, but who he is. And the problem is, so many of us, we don't do it because we feel like, well, I know him. I know who God is. And we can explain like all these doctrines. And we can explain the hypostatic union. And we can explain the Trinity. And we can explain, you know, all of these doctrines. And we know these facts. But do we understand there's a difference between knowing facts about somebody and knowing them? There's a big difference. There's a big difference of that. You know, and I could take forever. I could literally spend my life trying to fully understand my wife, and I still wouldn't be there. Like, I would be so far off. How much more time would it take for us as we seek to learn who God is? How much more would it take? How much more effort should it take? And how much more time should it take? We could never come to the place where we feel like, well, I know him already. I'm just going to get to all the... we have to remember, the first thing that Paul desires for these believers is that they would increase in the knowledge of God and the knowledge of his will. And I even find it interesting, he has to remind them again, and I'd encourage you to read the book of Colossians, because over and over again, you're going to see him repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. But go back to chapter number 3 where he gives all these commands. Look what he says in chapter number 3, in verse number 10. He gives them all the commands, and then he has to say again, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. There's this renewing that comes from the knowledge. And as we continue reading the Bible, we learn that this renewing is a daily renewal that must take place. It's a daily, Lord, expose me to who you are. Because what happens is, I don't know if you ever have something that like, you experience for the first time and you like fall in love with it and you want to tell everyone about it because you know that they're going to enjoy it. You know, like maybe you come across this restaurant and you really like it and you want to tell everyone about it because you know that they're really going to enjoy it. You know, or like you watch a movie series and like it blows your mind and you want to tell someone about it because you're saying, if you watch it, I know you're going to love it. And Paul is telling them, listen, you have got to know who God is, because I know if you were to know him, it would change everything for you. And what we see in the Bible, it reminds me of like Isaiah. And Isaiah gets called up into the heavens, and he sees God high and lifted up, being worshipped by the angels. And you know what happens? Well, he just sees God. And he can know, and he can visibly see the God who made him. It creates a response of him. Where he says, woe unto me, I'm a man of unclean lips. Well, here's the thing. Isaiah, before he was going to go minister, he needed to know who God was. And the same thing is true for us. If we're going to be pleasing to God, if we're going to have any hope in trying to live in a manner that be pleasing to God, we have to start by understanding who he is and walking with him and spending time with him. And some of us have stopped growing in our love for others. And some of us have stopped growing in our faith in God. And some of us have stopped growing altogether as a Christian, not because you're putting in less effort, not because you don't care, not because you're not trying, but simply because a lot of us have just stopped trying to get to know him. We've just altogether stopped trying to get to know him. But you know what Paul desires? When you read Paul, what you constantly see is that I may know him, that I may know him, that I may see him, that I may be with him. What is he saying? Even Paul, the guy who's going to write a third of the New Testament, like he knows God certainly better than I do, and yet he is still cleaving after more knowledge of who his God is. How foolish would we be to skip that step and to think that we don't need that? So if we're failing with a lot of the do's and the don'ts, maybe before you start trying to look into the, you know, all the little life hacks to, you know, to help you stop. And, you know, maybe the problem is I don't have enough accountability. Could be. Well, the problem is that there's too much opportunity. Could be. A lot of times you just need to back up a step and say, God, do I know you? Do I know you the way you desire me to know you? I think if we were to do that, we'd find our view would be a bit different. He calls us to live in a way that would be pleasing to him. I told you it wouldn't be long this morning. Just one, and again, it sounds so simple, but it's so necessary, it's so fundamental, and yet so often overlooked. Do you know God? Will you pray with me?